One guest, 10 songs, 10 reasons. Music was my first love on Radio Glamorgan.
My guest on this edition of Music Was My First Love made his name during the punk years as drummer with Generation X, having previously come very close to joining The Clash. He's formed a couple of bands since and also played with Sham 69's Jimmy Percy. I'm talking about Mark Laff, and we'll hear from him after his first choice, which comes from Miss Petula Clark.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
Mark Laff, welcome to Hospital Radio Glamorgan and Music Was My First Love.
Welcome, Andrew.
Can I just check first, am I pronouncing your surname correctly? Is it Laff or Laff?
No, it's Laff. It's half of a French surname called Laffolet. So I cut it in half for pronunciation and spelling purposes, Andrew.
Okay, so, brilliant. Tell me about your first.
It takes less time.
It does.
It takes less time.
and if the only thing I have to worry about is Laff or Laugh, then I'm not complaining.
Good.
Tell me about your first choice, Downtown from Petula Clark.
Goodness me. Well, just listening to it then, it's a magnificent record for me in terms of what it meant to me as a small boy growing up in the 60s, which at times seemed very black and white, and that was a sound that put colour into my life, and as many records did. But that resonates deeply with me, that there's hope, and just go looking for it and you'll find it. And beautifully sung, beautifully written, great words. For me, it's gold. So I hope that says as much as as it needs to say to sell that one.
So I take it you've always been a music lover then from a young age.
I hate music, Andrew.
Do you?
Yeah, I prefer fishing. Now, can we talk about Pike? And
Pike,
no,
yeah.
Seriously.
Here's a picture of the one I got away.
I meant Pike off Dad's Army. No, of course it is. It was a light for me, and it just grew bigger and bigger, and eventually I walked into the light.
And was there music being played at home? Would your parents
have
played?
Yeah, there was. My mum and dad had a handful of... it was frugal back in the day, so there wasn't a big collection, but there was a handful of 12-inch albums, LPs, as they were called in the long playing records, Nat King Cole, Andy Williams, my mum really liked. Just a few albums. But my brother, who was about 9 years old, had quite a few records that certainly made a mark on, made an impression on me from the 60s.
Can you remember who those artists were then that your brother was playing?
Oh, my God, of course. So we had Sgt. Pepper by the Beatles in the house. We had well-respected Kinks by the Kinks. We had the Small Faces second LP on Immediate Records, which is a huge record.
Rolling Stones next, Mark. Tell me about the track you've chosen.
I can't remember which one I chose.
I can't get no satisfaction.
Of course it's okay. Probably the greatest guitar riff known to man and the most seductive and dangerous record. I say that. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of those old blues artists that made some remarks back in the day. Mm. But this on the mainstream media was certainly a controversial record. To me, it's just a fantastic song played by a brilliant rock and roll group. And, yeah, the Rolling Stones, Satisfaction. It doesn't get better than that, does it?
No. It is a great track, isn't it?
Wow. Andrew, these songs you're playing tonight.
You chose them.
I'm going to tune in more often.
No.
They sound as good. Don't they sound as good as ever?
Absolutely.
I mean, and am I wrong?
Even their latest album is up there with some of their best stuff.
What, Hackney?
Yeah.
Hackney Diamonds?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've only heard a few, but what I've heard, I really like.
Now,
definitely.
I'm a bit younger than you, I think. He says, trying to be respectful. I was born in 66.
But you still like Werther's Originals, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. All every day, yeah. So when I was a kid, I wanted to play guitar. I wanted to be a pop star, and I suspect that most kids of my age, it was guitar or piano. So why the drums?
Ah, well, how long have you got?
As long as you need.
Listen, this is the story, okay? So my best friend at the time, Mick Michael, his neighbours moved, and the new neighbours that moved in was a very young couple, and he was a young, hip guitar player. And they got talking, and he came into school one day. This is when I was about 12, by the way, 11, 12. And he said, oh, my new next-door neighbour is a guitar player. He's going to give me guitar lessons. So I said, well, will he give me some? He went, no. And it was brutal. And that day I went home and I remember it as though it was yesterday. I watched Top of the Pops, and there was a group on Top of the Pops, and I saw this drummer who I'd not seen anything like it in my life. It was such a performance, such theatrics, that I was listen, there's a lot of comedy in my life where I've been fixed to the screen thinking, wow, this is absolutely magnificent. But this gentleman that was playing the drums just took me to a different place. And I thought, okay, that's what I want to do. That's what I'm going to do. That's how it's going to be. So that was it, really.
And are you talking about Keith Moon?
Ringo Starr.
Ringo Starr. Interesting.
No, of course it's Keith.
Keith, yeah. Because he was a huge influence on you, wasn't he?
He was. You have to acknowledge the person that really put you on the straight and narrow. Mm. It was Keith Moon that got me into playing drums. And, yeah, it was. I think they were doing, I can't remember what song it was. I wish I could. I think it was Summertime Blues, maybe, on Top of the Pops. 1970.
Did you meet him?
I did. I was really lucky enough to meet him a couple of times. I was, do you want me to tell you the story?
Yeah, please.
Okay. Well, I was at a rehearsal in Camden Town in Generation X, 1978, I think this was. And myself and Bob Andrews, the guitar player, we used to get there early so we could play the songs that the other two didn't want to play.
Hmm.
So we'd have a jam, so to speak. Anyways, so I'm at the back of this rehearsal room in Camden Town. It's called Alaska. And the door opened and I thought, oh, that guy looks familiar. It can't be, can it? Oh, God, it's Keith Moon. And Keith Moon walked through the door. Then Graham Chapman from Monty Python walked through the door. And then Billy walked through the door. And then a photographer. And I thought, oh, my God, nobody told me this was happening. And Billy had just been to a Paul McCartney thing, a film, something. Anyway, it was one of those gatherings, one of those presentations. And he'd said, would you come down? And, in his heart, he knew how much I liked Keith. And it was a special thing for me to tip my hat to Billy to say thank you, really, because he didn't need to do that, but Keith came down, he didn't have to, and Graham didn't have to, and bless him, he got behind the drum kit, and they did three numbers. Can you believe it? So there I am watching Keith Moon play with my group, doing I Can See for Miles, Shaking All Over, and I Think My Generation, and he broke the bass drum pedal, the old sod, and bless him, and it was a magnificent year. Hey, listen, sometimes dreams happen for you, and certainly it was a dream of mine. I couldn't have wished for more, really. It was an incredible moment. There's photographs of it somewhere. And, it was lovely. It was beautiful.
I'm just thinking, Billy, Graham and Keith, that must have been one night out, I tell you.
Well, do you know what? Sadly, it was very close to Keith passing. Hmm. So he was on the trying to be on the upside of trying to get it together, and I think life just caught up with him, and it didn't happen for him. So you know, a few years earlier, it would have been one hell of a night, yeah, for sure.
Any other drummers around that time that you looked up to that inspired you?
Drummers. Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah. Of course, Ringo. Ringo is kind of like the Elvis Presley of drummers in the pop world. Gene Krupa, Buddy Rich, Louis Belson, those jazz guys.
Yeah.
I used to see a little bit of that on the TV and think, wow, that's something different. But in the rock pop world, it was Kenny Jones from the Small Faces, mm-hmm. who does my favourite drum solo. He does a song with Rod called I Know I'm Losing You, which has got a magnificent rhythmic section in the middle there, which I call a drum solo because it's just Kenny, which is beautiful, really. Ginger, of course. All of them, really. All of them, Andrew. They were all great players in those days. And I thank them all for being such a massive influence on where I am now, you know. I go back to them and I think, it's all great for me. It's all great. The 60s players and anyone before the 60s, because that's where I started, was like 1970.
Yeah.
So anything before that was just a massive influence on me. I was all ears. I was Dumbo, if you will. Big-eared.
A mixed bag of musical choices tonight, which I love.
Is there?
And next up, Out and In from the Moody Blues. Tell me about this one.
Oh, my goodness. Well, okay. Well, these certain groups come along and you just feel an affiliation with them. And there was a record out called Question at the time by the Moody Blues, which was on an album called A Question of Balance, sung by Justin Hayward. And I used to talk to my brother, obviously, a lot about music. And he said, this group's really good. You want to check them out? And I thought, I'll go, you know what, I'll spend the pocket money and go for the album. And I bought A Question of Balance and I loved it. And I ended up, it's one of those things where the records meant so much to you that you, if you fell in love with the band, you went through the entire collection, you bought it all. And I ended up buying it all. I went to see them so many times. It was one of the first groups I ever saw live at Wembley Empire Pool. Probably the worst seat in the house, but it was behind Graham Edge, the drummer. So I got to see him do his stuff. This record is a record written by Mike Pinder, who sadly we lost not too long ago. Magnificent songwriter, so underrated. He was he was the forerunner of the Mellotron. For anyone that doesn't know what the Mellotron is, it's a keyboard which has... they're all tapes. Each note that you play is a tape of a stringed instrument. So you're playing an orchestra, if you will. And the Moody Blues had this... If you look at Mike Pinder's Wikipedia, it will tell you all about it. I won't bore the audience too much because I think, wow, this is getting too scientific. But it was a beautiful sound. And there wasn't many groups that took this Mellotron on. Nirvana, the 60s group, they took it on. Mm. The Greek group but I fell in love with the Moody Blues, and this is a very special song for me, which has meant so much to me over the years lyrically. And in the title, it says a lot, and it's a beautiful song sung by Mike. And I'd never got to meet them, unfortunately, but it's a great record. It's off a record called To Our Children's Children's Children, which, and again, says something. Mm. So it's a good song. It's a really nice song.
This is the Moody Blues with Out and In. Mark, how important, especially to you, do you think was the arrival of punk? Because it came towards the end of a decade that was very much the decade of pop music.
Yeah, great question. How important was it? Well, it was a door opener for me, Andrew, in that to want to do what I wanted to do without having to suffer the indignities. No, not the indignities, but to... without having to suffer years of toiling around the UK, trying to make a name for oneself, one could actually identify with a few other people that said, make a noise now and we can make it good. And for me, it was a niche market, of course. And I was very enough lucky to be a part of that. Kind of losing myself in this question, really. It was so important for me to I felt like I was gearing up for it, if that makes sense. Mm. Does that make sense,
Andy? It does make sense. But also, I think, you know, I said to you I was born in 66, and in terms of getting into
great music.
I consider myself, in terms of music, a child of the 70s, a child of pop music. But looking back, I think punk came along at a time when it was needed, because a lot of people will look back at those 70s and say it was bland and going nowhere.
It felt like that. Obviously, for me as a big music lover, I still loved the groups that I really liked. Although, especially with someone like The Who, you felt that it was diminishing in many respects. It had lost that vibrancy, that excitement, that danger. And I mean, there was a few others that didn't. I'm a big Led Zeppelin fan, and they were still very hard at it, if that makes sense. Mm. But yeah, it was thinning out, and it was becoming a distant thing. You were losing touch with those artists, whereby you could see them in the clubs in the 60s, and now it was like you were 300 miles away and watching a screen and having to pay a heavy price to be there. So punk was really bringing it back to a realistic situation of, right, this is what's important. You know, this is what important for young people. I think maybe those big groups had lost the identity of what it was to be young in many respects. But hey, listen, it's just an opinion. But yeah.
Subway Sect?
Who were they?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Great question. Well, Subway, I have to tell you the whole story, really, if that's okay.
Absolutely, all the time you need.
Okay, so my dad, bless him, got me a job for this big publishing house in Waterloo called IPC Magazines. And it was there that I met a young guy, a couple of years older than me, called Danny Welsh. And we hit it off straight away for our love of music. And he was very much more street than I was. And he would tell me that these young bands coming through, and I go, oh, no, I never heard of them. And he goes, well, yeah, but they're really so good. These are the bands that are going to happen. You've got to check them out, Mark. You've got to, you know, keep an eye open for this. And it got to the point where he said, listen, we're going to go out and see some of these. And we did. And we went down to Water Street to try and see Eddie and the Hot Rods. We couldn't get in because the queue was literally from the Marquee down to Old Compton Street. And he said, listen, let's forget this. We're never getting in. So it was an exciting scene that was slowly bubbling under. And he said, look, the Heartbreakers are in town. This is Johnny Thunders and the Heartbreakers. Mm. They've just lost Jerry on the drums. Why didn't you go for that audition? And you've got to remember, Andrew, I'm 17, 18 at the time. And this is like, okay, let's do this. And I bypassed that because they were from America. They were from New York. And they had a kind of flair for interesting things, which probably I won't discuss on the show tonight.
Okay, yeah.
But he said, look, The Clash are coming through. They've just lost their drummer. We've got to get you know, we're going to go to the audition. And we went to the audition. He used to hang out with all these guys at the clubs. And he said to Joe, you know, I've got this mate. He's a great drummer, blah, blah, blah. He said, well, bring him down. So I went down to this audition. Danny came with me. And there was three drummers there. There was a guy there with his girlfriend, looking very nervous. There was another guy there called Nicky Hedden, and then there was me. The drummer with the girlfriend went first, and he didn't last long, bless him. And then Nicky went, and he was really good. And then I went, and they kind of took me upstairs and then said, look, we'll give you a call on Friday if you got it or not. And Bernard, the manager, gave me a call. He said, look, you haven't got the job, but do you want to come in on Monday and play with these guys? And I said, yeah, sure. And I went along to the same rehearsal place, and it was a group called the Subway Sect. They had lost their drummer, literally in the last week. And it was Vic Goddard, Rob, and Paul Myers. And we played, and then for an hour or so, I really liked it. And then I went upstairs, and Bernard said, what did you make of it? And I said, well, I really like them. It's pretty cool. It's good. He said, so what are you doing Thursday? I said, nothing. He said, well, have you got a passport? I said, no. He said, well, go to the post office, get your passport, because we're going on tour on Thursday. And I couldn't believe it. So I went to my post office in North Finchley High Road, near Tally Ho Corner. And it was a paper passport in them days. You could literally queue up, get a little picture taken of yourself, and they'd stick it in the... Yeah, that was it. That was me joining the Subway Sect for the White Riot Tour in 1977. So...
As one... Quite... One door closed in your face with a clash, another one opened.
As life, yeah, as normally as that happens in life, if you recognise it, yeah. I was very lucky. It was a situation, being 18 years old, and you have all these dreams and aspirations to do what you want to do.
Mm.
And I was pushing for it, and yeah, it happened for me. I was very, very lucky.
One of the great names in music of the late 20th century next, Mark, yeah. Led Zeppelin, you mentioned them just before. Ooh. Like with a number of the bands and artists you've chosen, a massive back catalogue. So why ramble on?
Oh, well, you know, in 1970, the second album, Led Zeppelin 2, it was one of those records which just seemed to go on forever and ever, and you'd hear it. The title track, A Whole Lot of Love, I'm sure everybody knows, was just huge and immense back in the day. And Ramble On is just one of those beautiful songs. And when they got back together with the son of John Bonham, the drummer who unfortunately passed away in 1980, Jason Bonham, they got back together, and it's a wonderful performance that they did of this song. And it's always been a song which I really like. I especially like the guitar solo in the middle with the dual guitars of Jimmy Page. I just really like it. It's still a beautiful song to me. That whole album for me to this day is magnificent. And yeah, Led Zeppelin Ramble On is a special song for me. But I know I'm about to sing.
Mark, we're recording this the first week of February 2026, and January felt on TV and radio very much like Bowie month, as it was 10 years since his passing. Was he an influence?
Oh, my goodness. Yes, he was. Particularly because of a school girlfriend at the time by the name of Angela Wills. And I'll tell you how the story goes. I think it was midweek. She said, what are you doing Friday night? Now, you've got to understand, this is a 14-year-old she's talking to. And I said, well, not a lot on a Friday night. And we're on our way to the Rainbow Theatre in Islington, which was kind of like the North London Hammersmith Odeon. And we're going to queue up for David Bowie tickets. He was doing his Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders of Mars tour with Roxy Music supporting. And we're there at 10 o'clock, freezing, and it was quite an amazing thing to be sitting outside this theatre in Islington, watching all these crazy young people turn up in form a queue, and being part of this whole scene that we didn't know how big it was going to get and how popular David was going to be. But to have those front seat tickets and watch Roxy doing their Virginia Plain tour was truly amazing. I was so lucky in that I stuck with those records for a long time. And Generation X were very lucky to play on a TV show with Mark Bolan. And David Bowie was on that show, and I got to meet him very briefly. So It was very exciting. Yes, so there you go. David Bowie was and still is a massive part of my life. Heroes would be probably my second favourite record of all time.
We are Radio Glamorgan.
She was the queen of the little white and
Now, normally, Mark, at this stage of every other episode of Music Was My First Love, I would have spoken to you on Talkback and I would have said, when that track finishes, don't wait for me, will you just start talking about it? But I had to come on and I had to say, wow, Dr. John.
Dr. John.
The incomparable Dr. John.
Yeah, and I was lucky enough to see him at very close proximity. I got to tell you, where I lived with my mum and dad in this humble little council flat at the top of the road, Torrington Park, was a pub called the Torrington, which was on the circuit of the up and coming band. And Dr. John was playing there one day. And I bought a ticket and there I am in this small back of a pub watching Dr. John play Mama Roo and all this crazy New Orleans kind of stuff, which when you're a young kid and you hear that for the first time, you think, where is that coming from? You know, it's such a strange sound, and it's exciting as well, and dangerous, and very pleasurable.
Mark,
you enjoyed that, didn't you?
I love him. I've got a couple of his albums, but yeah. I love his version, and so many people have done it. I love his version of Goodnight Irene.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mark, I wanted to talk about your original seventh choice, which for various reasons I had to ask you to change, getting a lot of stick on the way from our very own Rob Jones. How important to the way, I mean, we talked about punk earlier, but how important in the way music and in many ways culture changed with the Sex Pistols?
Wow. Really, it's an atom bomb moment. For me, when I heard the Sex Pistols, life-changing moments, and sometimes you choose to see them, hear them, or and I certainly noticed this one. It's almost beyond words, Andrew, the effect that this group had. Everybody in history sees the Bill Grundy show when they had that TV performance when they stood in for Queen on that daytime TV show. Just everything about this group is exciting, dangerous, really colourful, lyrically fantastic. And to this day, and do you know what I think at the moment? These songs and lyrics mean just as much as they did then as they do now, and if not more so. I know. you have to be careful of what you say these days. Well, but
I know it wasn't the track you chose, but for many, and we mentioned Rob before, and he said this on his show a few times, but yeah. Anarchy in the UK changed music forever.
It did. Of course it did. Of course it did. And the young man that spoke these words, my goodness, a 20-year-old, 21-year-old, John Lydon, John Rotten, it was absolutely magnificent. And when I watched those early performances of the guys doing that on So It Goes, which is an incredible performance, the Richard Williams show up north, you know, and to see these guys do it, and you know, John's not with them doing it now, but I saw him with Frank Carter a couple of times recently. And these songs are so magnificent. And yeah, it means a lot to me anyway.
So the substitute track, tell me about the Small Faces in Ichiku Park.
Goodness me. I suppose these are my guys, really. Everyone had the Beatles or the Stones or the Monkees back in the 60s. I kind of had the Small Faces. These were my team, you know. So you had Steve Marriott, Ronnie Lane, Kenny Jones, Ian McClagan, the Small Faces. And they had, I suppose, three or four hit singles in the pop charts, which were all really magnificent, very cheeky, very London, very, very English. Steve Marriott, probably one of our most brilliant singers. I can't speak highly enough of this guy, Steve Marriott. Did you ever see him live at all?
No.
Oh, my God. Really an incredible singer. But this little format of the Small Faces, wonderful songs. I guess it just struck the chord with me. And, beautiful stuff. It's these songs that you're playing for me tonight, Andrew, they sound as good as when I first heard them, which is so great for me.
Yeah.
I don't wish to be too personal on this, but they just sound brilliant songs. And, yeah, the Small Faces, wow, it doesn't get much better than that. It's all too
beautiful. How did Generation X come into your life?
Well, OK, so that tour I was talking to you about, the White Riot tour, I was checking out the scene in depth, and there was a halfway point in the tour where we had a few days off, and I was in this club in London called Dingwalls. It's still there now, but it's a different location. And I met the manager of Generation X, and I was talking to him about what I wanted to do in the future. And he said, well, we're looking for a drummer. Do you want to come down and play with the guys? And I said, yeah, why not? I'd love to. And I went down and had a play, and I didn't hear anything from them. And I went back on tour, and then I think it was at St. Albans City Hall, Tony James, the bass player, came up to me and said, you got the job. So that was me joining Generation X. It wasn't that I'd fallen out of in love with Subway Sect. I just thought that I needed to go in a different direction.
Hmm.
And henceforth, that's where I went.
I'm not going to ask you about reasons for leaving Generation X, because that's personal. But whilst you were with them, what was Billy Idol like? Because he was an extremely charismatic front man, wasn't he?
Very much so. Very intelligent guy. He brought in the music, really. Tony would always come up with some words, and we would put the meat on the bones, so to speak. But going back to Billy, yeah, very charismatic. He knew what he wanted. He was very defined in his approach. He loved his music. I thought he was a very good-looking guy, and I just thought, wow, I better stick with this guy because he's going somewhere. Let's slipstream on this one. No, seriously. I was very lucky to join those guys. We had a incredible guitar player called Rob Andrews, who was, honestly, when I say he was the best guitar player in London at the time, he really was And when you listen to those records, amazing stuff. But, yeah, but going back to Billy, yeah, I mean, he's still doing it to this day.
Yeah.
So what can I say?
And when you quit the band in 1980, did you have any idea about what you were going to do next prior to forming Empire with Rob?
Well, listen, I'll be honest with you. It was a parting of the ways. It was the group was very polarised in many respects, in that it was Billy and Tony. They were much older than us at the time. You know, when you're younger, and if you're 18 and somebody's 26, that's a hell of a difference.
Yeah.
But when put 20 years on it, it doesn't make any difference at all. But at that, you know, nurturing age, it's a lot. So, as I say, it was somewhat polarised. Bob left the group, and we knew we were kind of knackered, to be honest, because there wasn't a guitar player to replace him. There really wasn't. And it wasn't long after that I parted company. And it was a natural thing for me and Bob to do what we... It's a natural progression for us to put a group together and do this record called Expensive Sound, which has now gone down as somewhat of a cult classic, I'm told, which is nice. So I believe the check's still in the post somewhere. Perhaps I shouldn't have moved to France. I don't know.
No, maybe not.
It's waiting for me somewhere. That post office in North Finchley. I better get there soon. What was the question again, Andrew? Sorry.
When you left the band, did you have any idea what you were going to do? But you said Rob had already left.
Yes, you know, we were going to do... we felt a little bit inhibited in terms of our approach to music in Generation X. And we felt we weren't being acknowledged for what we were bringing in as well as that. So, and as you're growing up and you progress with like-minded people, you form different views. And anyway, we were going in one direction and the guys were going in the other direction. So we were quite happy to do something that we really wanted to do. So we spent the next 3 years doing these songs, which, and to be honest, we couldn't get arrested for. So,
But you had fun not getting arrested.
We did. Listen, it's art is a strange thing, isn't it? Mm. You know, when you put the paint on the paper, you might love it and maybe somebody else does, maybe they don't, you know. So that's how it was. So, yeah. That we knew what we were going to do for the next 3 years anyway.
I've had a few guests on this show, Mark, who were making music in the 80s, such as Lee John of Imagination, Susie Quattro and Tom Robinson, who in fairness both crossed over two decades, Neil Arthur of Blancmange, Teresa Bazaar of Dollar, Hal Linders of Dire Straits, this series coming out now, Henry Peaceman of The Christians. And the impression I got from them and from what I was watching on TV was that the 80s was a fun time to be in music. But the picture, you're the first guest I've had from should we call it, the punk scene. The picture the media paints of the late 70s was that people in punk bands were really aggressive, that the bands were spat at during live gigs. So from someone who was in a big and successful band in that era, was it fun? Was it enjoyable?
Oh, it's incredible fun. Yes, indeed, you were spat at, and they were very violent times. You had certain other groups coming through which were bringing political statements into the punk rock scene, which were causing controversy with the media, and going into the 80s was a difficult thing because it kind of got taken over by the New Romantics. Mm-hmm. And punk was a very short thing. It's a bit like the 60s Summer of Love. You know, people seem to think that it went on for several years when it was only one summer, you know. And it was a bit like that for punk rock, really. It was kind of almost done by... mid 77, if you know what I mean. Strange, but there you go.
It won't surprise you to know, Mark, that after over 120 episodes of Music Was My First Love, the Beatles are by far the most chosen band or singer. But a first outing for your choice, so why Magical Mystery Tour?
I just loved the drums. I remember watching this as a kid, 1967, I think it was, thinking, wow, this is crazy. But this particular song, hey, listen, there's not enough time to talk about how remarkable these guys are. Obviously, with the aid of George Martin, the producer, who made these songs so wonderful. But the songwriting, the ideas, without the ideas, we've got nothing, have we?
No.
And it's just one of many songs. I could have chosen a million of Beatles songs, but this one came to my mind. I just think the drums are great. I bought this as a little fold-out double EP thing, so it's kind of special in my mind as well. But Ringo's great on this, and it's an exciting rock song, you know? I really like it.
Do you know, Mark, the one... Beatle track that I absolutely love Ringo's drumming on because it's subtle is Day in the Life on Sgt. Pepper.
Oh my goodness. Well, yeah, that was an album that was in the house, and when I started to play the drums, I would mimic all of that. And the ideas, you know, people don't give him the credit.
No, they don't.
He's really fantastic. I've got to say, Paul McCartney's a pretty decent drummer as well.
Yes, yes, it is, yeah.
But yeah, no, you're right. Those drum rolls on A Day in the Life are just too...
beautiful. Yeah. A couple of post-Generation X questions. What was the experience of working with Jimmy Percy like?
Fantastic.
Yeah?
Jimmy is a very exciting person to be with, full of ideas, very, very funny person, and very endearing. Yeah, I tip my hat to Jimmy Percy. He had the world in his hands, and it was a bit like sand falling through his fingers, I think, unfortunately. He had the Sham Pistols. I don't know if you know that the Sex Pistols split up and half of Sham 69 went together. And then he decided to have a solo career. And just things didn't work out for Jimmy. But listen, he's still doing Sham 69. They still sound great. And I really like him a lot. I think he's a fantastic guy.
And then mid-80s, you had some success with rockabilly band 20 Flight Rockers. I suspect
a whole
different experience that had gone before.
Well, it was my chance to have to go in the sweet shop and choose exactly what I wanted, Andrew. It really was. So
it's a lovely way of putting it.
Well, thank you very much. Checks in the post. Listen, I'd searched high and low for the guitar player and found him, and found the singer and found the bass player that I really, really wanted to work with. And it was just a dream come true. And things went really well. Unfortunately, in terms of balance, in terms of record company deals, we didn't get the deal that we wanted in the mid-80s. We did get signed to Warner Brothers, and we had Bill Drummond, who went on to be part of KLF.
Mm-hmm.
He was our A&R guy, and he unfortunately left Warner Brothers. And we were kind of left high and dry, and things went from bad to worse. So it was a lovely 3 years period of having exactly what I wanted and having an incredible time and playing some amazing songs. But I'm happy to say that 20 Flight Rockers will be playing again this year.
Oh,
which
great.
Is really exciting, yeah.
Coming to Cardiff?
I would like to come to Cardiff. Can we get the Millennium Stadium on a Saturday night?
I'll see who's in my little black book.
I would love that. Of course, Cardiff. Why not? It'd be amazing. It's a great group. It still sounds really exciting and still looks really good as well, which I like. I like things to look nice.
Hmm.
But yeah, Cardiff. Why not?
Tell me about your penultimate choice, Mark. Radio Gaga from Queen.
Oh, my goodness. These are one of these... Queen, when I was a young guy, when this group came out, you just couldn't help but think, wow, this is a band that's going to be absolutely huge. And I had the first album. I had the first four, and I went to see them live at the Rainbow, my local place, just on the cusp of the Sheer Heart Attack tour. And they were just phenomenal. And then Bohemian Rhapsody broke, and of course they became the worldwide sensation that they still are to this day. But it's one of those groups, a bit like the Small Faces, a bit like the Beatles, a bit like Led Zeppelin, all your favourite groups. Each individual member is such a huge part. And all these four guys wrote the songs. I love Roger Meadows, Taylor the drummer, one of my favourite drummers. Good looking guy as well. Not as good looking as me.
Of course not, yeah.
No. But a wonderful group. This song, it was an album when it came out. It got me through a difficult time. So, yeah, it means a lot to me. I still think it's a great record.
All we hear is Radio Gaga.
Mark, you're semi-retired now, and in 2004 you became director of a holistic lifestyle therapy company. Tell us, how did that come about and what it does?
Oh my goodness, well, that let me just put you straight there, really. That company, it's is a company called De-Stress and Go, and it was all about providing health and well-being in the workplace and in exhibitions and conferences. And yeah, it was my lovely wife, Amanda. She has a plethora of disciplines in the field of health and well-being. And we decided to put a business together and provide that to said workplaces and exhibitions and conferences, yeah. So it's still going. Not that I do that anymore, but she's still very active in that field. So, yeah.
Well, speaking from experience, I have suffered since my first...
Back problems.
No, thank God, no, not yet. I suffered for about 30-odd years without realising what it was, with what I call and the doctors called anxiety in the workplace. About five or 6 years ago, I realised what it was. I got it dealt with, and just I was on meds, which I'm now not on. But I had one-on-one therapy that didn't work for me. But group therapy is brilliant because you're listening to people thinking, "My God, I'm not in this alone." But I wish there had been people like you 30 years ago, just so that employers could understand what their employees are going through.
Yeah. The difficulty is employer wants to acknowledge stress in the workplace, do they?
No.
That's the bottom line. Come and work here and feel really stressed. It doesn't read good on the job advertisement, does it?
No.
In the job centre.
No.
But, you know, it does happen.
But people are talking about it more now. People are accepting that it's there.
I'd like to think so. I mean, to look at how things... We were looking at what situations were happening in America at the time, because you'd get employees suing the company because of whatever it was, whether it would be mental health issues or back problems because they were being forced to sit in a chair and sit in the early days of computers and not being able to walk properly, you know. So a discipline that was formed was called on-site massage, which is an ergonomically designed chair which enables you to stay for longer periods at a computer or in a fixed position. So we were doing a lot of that kind of stuff, and I wish it was acknowledged more these days. I still think there's a long way to go, but I think we're on the up. I think people are looking at it a lot more seriously now than they did 20 years ago anyway.
Your final choice, Mark, is totally new for me. So what can you tell me about Big Machine from the New South Wales?
Well, this is... I feel excited talking about this because being 67 years old and being by a new young group, these guys are from Australia. I'll tell you how I found them. I was unfortunately scrolling on Instagram and... you get these little snippets of songs, some which are not so good as others, but there's just a few bars of this song came on. I just thought that tune sounds great. And I went to YouTube, looked at the video, heard the whole song. I just thought, this is such a great song. And for me, it was the best song of last year. I told them so as well. And that's about it. I don't know too much about the guys, but I know they're going to be touring soon. It's a hell of a noise. It's a great song. It's a tremendous production. I'd like to work with that producer for sure. And yeah, I wish these boys well. Tremendous. Big Machine by the New South Wales.
Two final questions, which I ask all my guests on Music My First Love. Is there one thing professionally that you're most proud of?
Oh, goodness me, what a question. I've liked it all, really.
Would it be listening, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but listening to what you've had to tell me in the last couple of hours, that little jam session with Keith Moon must be up there.
Well, yes. I mean, goodness me. You know, my heart sunk when the guy walked in the room, and to see him on your own drum kit playing with your group, you know, you can't write that kind of stuff.
No.
But, you know, seeing some of my favourite groups, seeing some wonderful theatre, seeing some fantastic movies. I can't really. It's like, what's your favourite song of all time? I always say, well, look, my second favourite song is David Bowie.
Yeah.
And my third song is the Sex Pistols. And they go, well, what's number one? I said, well, there isn't a number one. No. How can there be, you know?
And as we sit here in February 2026, what are the immediate future plans, Mark?
Right, okay. Well, last year I went out on, I did a small tour of the UK. I put a group together called X Generation X, which was my take on doing the songs from the first and second albums of Generation X. This year is the 50th anniversary of punk rock, so I flew the flag up there to see how well it was received, and people really enjoyed it. So I'm going out again this year with a new lineup, which I'm really excited about. And 20 Flight Rockers are playing again this year. I'm also very privileged to be working with another drummer on a drum project. I won't say too much about that at the moment. So, yeah, it's really exciting year for me. I can't wait. Be in the moment is what they say. So I'm trying to be in the moment.
Mark, listeners won't be aware, as I'm handy with editing scissors, but we've had some horrendous technical difficulties tonight.
We have.
But
I'm sorry about
no,
that.
No, no, no.
Blame the French, Andrew. Blame the French.
But and if it's not their fault, blame them anyway. But it has been a genuine joy chatting with you, Mark Laff. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You've brightened my Monday evening.
Oh, bless you.
It's been a very nice time. You don't get these opportunities very often. The bloke at the back is always somewhat the last one to get interviewed, so it's been a real pleasure. Are you going to play Big Machine?
I'm going to play it now for you.
Wow, fantastic.
You've been listening to Music Was My First Love on Hospital Radio Glamorgan, where Mark Laff has been choosing 10 of his favourite songs. I'm Andrew Wolfe, and join me again soon when another guest chooses 10 of their favourite tracks on another edition of Music Was My First Love.
Music of the future.